Sox fans, are you ready? You are listening to the Ducks and Pucks podcast with your hosts, Mike Walters and Eddie Jones. This is the number one home for Anaheim Ducks talk and analysis. Here we go.
All right, welcome back to our show. We've got a special show this time covering all the action this past weekend. We actually had some prospect games. We had a golf tournament that Getzlaf put on and some NHL news to cover as well. We also have our writer Thomas with us. He's been keeping you up to date on all the prospects, and he ended up going to the two games up in San Jose because he lives up that way. Speaking of those two games, the Ducks split the two games, and Thomas, what were your thoughts, you know, with both these games and how the Ducks, you know, rookies looked?
So, first of all, it was just a lot of fun to see hockey again. I love going to rookie games. It's just so much fun to see hockey in mid-September, and just to me, it's always the unofficial start of the season. So I just love going to these games. It's so much fun. So whenever I go to these games, there are two things to me that matter the most. First, no one gets hurt on either side, because these are 18, 19, 20-year-old kids. I don't want to see anyone get hurt. I just want to see how they're doing. And the second thing I want to look for is just I want to see specific players this year, Theodore, Richie, Notnin, et cetera, play really, really well. That's all I care about. I don't care who wins. I don't care who loses. I just want them to be healthy and for certain players to stand out. So the first game, the Ducks lost, unfortunately, 4-1. It was a lot of fun to be at. It was actually at the SAP Center, the Sharks Home Arena, the Shark Tank. It was a pretty good crowd. They had had a fan fest earlier that day, so most of the lower bowl was filled in. But tickets were only $5. You could sit wherever you wanted. The crowd was really into it since, you know, they obviously won. There were two players who really, really stood out to me in that game. The first was Shea Theodore, and this is the first time I've gotten to see him play. And wow, that kid can just fly up and down the ice. There were a few times, especially during 4-on-4, where he just took the puck and he took off. He looked fat. He looked like Scott Niedermeyer did back in the day, except he has a better shot. Just an absolute cannon from the point that he didn't score any goals, but he had a few shots that were great and just missed. And there was one time I remember he was shooting at the end. I was sitting and I heard it hit the glass and it was just so loud. This is going to be a great kid in the next few years. The second player who stood out was Julius Notnin, drafted in the second round this past year by the Ducks. He had the Ducks' only goal in the game. That was a great shot from the slot. But what really impressed me about him wasn't the goal, but was how he was always able to find the puck in a shooting position. I counted at least 4 or 5 shots from him. At least 3 of those were in the slot. The puck just kept finding him in open space, and he got a quick shot off. So those were the two players who really, really stood out in that first game. In the second game, Theodore actually didn't play in this one. They never actually gave a reason why. To my knowledge, he's not injured. I think the Ducks just felt he couldn't show anything else in that game. So why risk playing him in it? And give a few other younger players like Manson, like Montour, more of a chance. So in that second game, the first player who stood out was Notnin again. He was just flying up and down the ice, winning faceoffs. He picked up a couple of assists and just had a great, great game. The other player who stood out was Nick Ritchie. He, of course, had the hat trick. So the first goal he scored, it was on the power play. It was on a bang-bang passing play where Josh Manson made a great play to hold the puck at the blue line. And the puck went to Notnin. He found Ritchie in the slot, and he just put it home. The second goal he scored was a tip shot, where Manson just loaded up from the point and Richie tipped it home. The third goal was into the empty net, where Stefan Nason, however you pronounce his name, made a great hustle play to get to a loose puck and just passed it to Richie, and he had the easy tap and goal for the hat trick.
Yeah, it sounded like it was a fun two games that you went to, Thomas. I mean, it seemed like Theodore and Richie are kind of the two names that have been coming up repeatedly. What do you think as far as, you know, the regular camps going on right now, Anaheim Ice, which I just went a couple days ago to. I got there a little late. I only saw the current players. But of these guys, do you think Theodore and Richie are the two, you know, living up to the hype, the two that will probably most likely make the team in the near future?
Yes. So for defense, Theodore clearly has the highest ceiling. I think Manson is more likely to be called up. in an injury situation just because of his NHL experience. But I do believe Theodore will be with the Ducks at some point this season, just because based on the last few years have gone, the Ducks blue line will at some point have two or three regulars off of it. So Manson will be up, Theodore will be up, and maybe someone else as well. For forwards, the Ducks are very, very deep, both on their roster and in San Diego this year. So Richie, to me, is a little less of a guarantee to make the Ducks roster this season. That being said, I will be surprised if he does not end up in Anaheim for at least one game this year, the way both Freeburg and Nason did last year.
And I guess the last group would be the goalie situation. You know, obviously we have the three goalies now, battling it out. And we talked about Gibson most likely being in San Diego. Did any of the other goalies that were there in San Jose, did they stand out to you?
Not that much. I wasn't looking at the goalies that closely while I was there, primarily because the three goalies were Landon Bau, Brendan Burke, and Ryan, I believe it's pronounced Farragher. So of the three, Farragher was actually in the Ducks system last year, splitting time between Norfolk and Utah in the ECHL. He was a restricted free agent this summer, and the Ducks didn't sign him. Instead, he just signed an AHL-only contract with San Diego. So he's in San Diego, but he's not a part of the Ducks system anymore. And then the other two players were both in juniors last year. And they're both on amateur tryout contracts with the Ducks. So there's a slight chance that maybe they'll be signed to an AHL deal or something. But none of those three will really have an impact on the future for the Ducks this season or in the future.
Yeah, and talking about the current roster right now, they're starting the camp this Friday. They're going to have everybody up there. They released the roster. We put it up on the website. You can go on there and look in our article where you can see the forwards, the defensemen, and the goalies. And everything's listed there. You can check it out. The little bit of a surprise was Brookbank and Vishnevsky. Vishnevsky, both coming to out to try out. So, Eddie, what do you think? These guys are, as I said before, they're kind of oldies but goodies. You know, they've both been on the Ducks in the past. They, fans have liked both of them. What do you think in terms of them coming out to the camp this week?
Well, we discussed this a little bit before we started recording, and Thomas said something, that's pretty spot on with these guys. And they're pretty much just warm bodies to participate, in camp, and so you don't have to play, Getzlaff or Perry as much and risk injuring them before the season. So, I really don't see either of them making the roster, the NHL roster for sure, and, maybe if they play well enough to earn themselves an AHL contract with San Diego, then that's a possibility. But, these are two guys that you really don't see cracking the lineup, and, we talked about the depth that the Ducks have. There's too many guys that they have to go through, from the starting roster, and even, Manson and Theodore, and even, guys like Montour as well that they have to go through.
And Thomas, do you concur with Eddie? You think that both of these guys are, are going to kind of have an uphill battle trying to make the regular team roster?
Yeah, I mean, the Ducks for the last several years have been really putting effort and a focus on getting younger and faster on the blue line, and Vishevsky and Brookbank are neither of those two things. Vishevsky is one of my favorite players from the early 2000s. He was on the team when I first started getting into hockey. He's always been one of my favorites. So I would love to see him end up in San Diego as a mentorship role. He's one of my favorites just because he was always known as such a hard hitter who would go out and lay you on your face. He was a lot of fun to watch. So I'm hoping I can catch a preseason game via Game Center and watch him again, because I haven't watched him since he went to the KHL 5-6 years ago. So I'd love to see him play again, but he's not going to be on the Ducks regular season roster. Maybe San Diego's.
Yeah, you think Brookbank and him maybe on San Diego's roster, if anything? That's probably the highest that we can hope for these two guys, Thomas.
Yeah, I doubt both would make it. I would think it'd be one or the other, because the Ducks already have Shane O'Brien signed to a contract down there, so he's kind of the veteran presence. And then they, of course, have Manson, they have Montour, they have Theodore, they have O'Brien, they have Gagne, they have Mega. They have a lot of defensive bodies down there. So if they may add one more, I don't think they would add both to that roster.
And, you know, that's another question that Ryan had asked us, too, is about, you know, with the camp starting this week and everything going on of these players, we, you know, as we talked about Richie and Theodore, of course, is there anybody else that you think that could push maybe for a spot? You know, if Brookbank and Vishnevsky aren't going to do it, is there anybody else?
I mean, the ones I would look to are the players who made their NHL debuts last year. So Josh Manson, if he plays well enough, he's got a shot at the bottom pairing. But I think he's most likely the first call up. Max Freeburg, Stefan Nason, I think they both have chances at the roster this season, depending upon how they do in training camp and how some of the veterans they sign, like Santorelli and Stewart and Horkoff, do. And then I think the one with the best chance is probably Chris Wagner. Before the Santorelli signing, I think he was guaranteed a spot on the Ducks. With the Santorelli signing, with the Horkoff signing, it's no longer a guarantee. But I think of the forwards, I think he's the one with the most chance. Because while he doesn't have the upside of Nick Ritchie or Nason or Kadelis or any of the higher-end prospects, he's proven he can play in the NHL on the fourth line and be a very effective presence there. So I think he's the one who has the best chance to it, but he's got to beat out at least one or two veteran players to get there.
Yeah, I agree with you. And Eddie, what do you think? You know, we did talk about Wagner before and, you know, the contract situation. You know, with him most likely starting in San Diego because of the waivers and whatnot. What do you think? Do you think Wagner would be one of the likely ones, or is there somebody else maybe you would hope to push for the team?
You would expect, like Thomas said, if anybody's going to push for a spot, it's somebody who, you know, who made their debut last year. And, you know, Manson played a handful of games with the Ducks, and Freiburg and Nason both made appearances. And, you know, I honestly would like to see Stefan Nason get another shot. I mean, obviously he came over in the Bobby Ryan trade, and there was a lot of promise around him when that trade was first made. And, you know, he's 22 now, and we really haven't seen him reach the potential that we'd hoped for. So if he gets another shot this season, that would be really nice to see.
Yeah, and it's going to be
some healthy.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see. You know, it's going to start this Friday. If you're not aware, we posted on the website. It's going to be at Anaheim Ice. They're going to have some scrimmages on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. I will be there on Friday, and I know a couple of the other writers will be there on Friday for sure. I don't know if I'll make it on the weekend or not, but we'll see. But that's going to happen. You know, stay tuned. You know, Thomas has really kept the blog going the last 4 or 5 weeks with all his articles, which we really appreciate, covering the prospects and keeping it going. And he'll keep it going, obviously, when the season starts. You know, another event that came up over this weekend, which was kind of a surprise for me, but was the Getzloff golf tournament, which it's a very actual good event. Raised, I just found out today, it raised over $400,000 for the Duchenne muscular dystrophy. And basically, what it is, and I didn't know this all together, Eddie and Thomas, we kind of talked about this, but there's muscular dystrophy, and this type, the Duchenne type, actually affects young males. And what happens is they have issues with their muscles, and they usually don't live past the age of 15 or 20. So it was you know, very interesting and a very big eye-opener to me, because I had not heard of this specific type. So basically what happens is every year, the Cure Duchenne organization, they have a golf tournament. They have the players come, and they have a bunch of people that sponsor the event. One of my friends sponsored the event, and basically last minute, I probably about a week or two before the event, I found out I was going to be able to go. But it was a fun event, raised a lot of money, and actually got a lot of insight from some of the players. Almost the whole team was there. And we can talk about some of the stuff that we brought up. But one of the things that was interesting is I talked to Sean Horkoff. He was extremely excited to be on the team, really thinks the team has a good chance. And we talked about this before, Eddie, as far as his role, and he confirmed it and kind of added some more. And he basically told me that he's going to play whatever Bruce wants him to play. He said he'll play center, he'll play right wing or left wing, Eddie. So we may see him all over the ice, you know, coming this camp.
Yeah, you know, he's that type of guy, though. You know, you saw it in Edmonton, even in Dallas last season. You know, he'll play wherever the coach wants him. I mean, you know, he's naturally a center, but he's comfortable playing on the wing. And You know, I'm sure he's just happy he ended up in you know, obviously in Anaheim with some with somewhere with a team that has a chance at the cup. I mean, he's at the twilight years of his career, so any chance at the cup that he can get, I'm sure he's happy, and he'll play wherever Boudreaux wants him.
Yeah, and I actually asked him about that too, as far as playing each position, and you know, what's he got left in the tank, and. Thomas, he told me he's got plenty left in the tank, and that he's got a couple years to go. So even though he signed the 1 year contract, you know, we can't rule out 100%. You know, he may be back next year with the Ducks too, Thomas.
I mean, he could be. With where he is at his in the career and where the Ducks are, and they clearly want to win this year. And to do that, they think they need more of a veteran presence and not as young of a roster. If they do win the cup this season or next season, I think. Some of the veterans on the Ducks will then price them out of Anaheim's range, and we'll see a large influx of their prospects coming up. But right now, with the Ducks trying to win this year, we're going to see Santorelli, we're going to see Horkoff, we're going to see Stewart playing not necessarily major roles, but important roles, roles that those veterans need to fill for the Ducks to win the cup this season. I love Horkoff's attitude about how he will play anywhere. He strikes me as being a lot like Todd Marchant was back in 07. Just a player you can plug in any position on any line, and he's going to give you a good, solid effort, and you're not going to worry about his play on the ice.
Yeah, and that's exactly what he told me. I mean, it was a pleasure to talk to him. He was extremely motivated from the conversation I had from him, which was actually a reoccurring theme with everybody I talked to. Everybody's extremely motivated and extremely positive going into the season. At one point during the event, it was kind of crazy, and when they had these groups of foursomes going around the golf, sometimes they get backed up, and where we were at, I actually had Getzlaf, Solani, and Perry all there at the same time, and obviously you guys saw the photos out there and whatnot, but you know, I got to talk to Perry for a little bit, and you know, that question comes up, and we've talked about it, and other people have talked about it before as well, is who's going to be the top line left wing. So I just straight up asked Barry. I just said, you know, if it was your choice, who would you put on there? Kind of curious to see what he would say. And, you know, Eddie, he went with Maroon, and we talked about this. Maybe it's a familiarity thing, but, I mean, obviously Boudreaux has the final say, but Perry likes the chemistry that he and Getzlaf have with Maroon.
Yeah, you know, you would expect that. You would, you know, I mean, he's not going to come out and say he wants to play with, you know, one of the new guys or anything. Like, not that he has anything against them, but, you know, they've played together on that line for, you know, majority of last season and even the season before that. So it's just, you know, it's an issue with chemistry. And if they feel that they can gel together, you know, we talked about that as one of the options and probably the most likely option to start the season. So, I mean, not surprising, but interesting to hear from him who he'd like to have on that left side.
Yeah, and what do you think, Thomas? I mean, we talked about this before, you know, because with Maroon, we've said, hey, you have another big body up there. He can play on the top line. Or, you know, you have Stewart, you have Sakach, you have Hagelin, you have all these guys with additional speed that could also be up there on that line. What do you think? I mean, obviously it's up to Boudreaux, but how do you feel? You like Maroon up there or do you like somebody else?
I don't, and since the Ducks don't have a clear top line left winger on their roster, and they haven't for a number of years now, I think Maroon is the best fit with Perry and Getzlaf, depending on the opponent. I think against, like, say, a Winnipeg team, a really big, heavy team, I think Maroon works great there because they're going to go out there and be even bigger and heavier than the opposition. Against a speed team like Chicago, I wouldn't mind seeing Hagelin giving a shot. I wouldn't mind seeing Sekic giving a shot. Just because a little more speed on that line could help them out a lot. The other interesting option is Chris Stewart. He's like Maroon. He's a big body. He can be physical. He can get low on the cycle. But he's never been a player who a lot of people thought has ever reached his full potential. He's got a couple of good seasons in, I think it's an 8 or 9 year NHL career now. But the other years, he hasn't matched up to those expectations. So he's one who... might be a better option than Maroon, depending on how he looks in camp with those two. But right now, to me, Maroon is the best option on the Ducks roster. That being said, the Ducks have a couple of rookies, a couple of prospects coming up. Nick Ritchie, most notably. They also have Nick Kadeles, Kevin Roy, and Max Freeberg, all left wingers, all who have top six potential. And I think seeing Nick Ritchie on that line in a year or two was a really exciting prospect.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, it's going to be interesting. I think the familiarity, like we talked about with Maroon and the Twins, is kind of what's going to play out. But as you said, Stewart could be thrown up there, or if the prospects, someone breaks the lineup for a game or two, it'd be interesting to see them up there. So, you know, we're still going to have to wait and see what the lineups are going to be like. At least we kind of have an idea. You know, I'm working on some nicknames that some of the players have told me about for other shirts and stuff, and I'll kind of save those for later. Don't want to let it out, you know, before I make some shirts. I've got some ideas in my head, but I haven't really put them down yet, and I'm sure Phil will help me write those out. But one of the funniest moments was actually at the event. We had these big clubs set up and big golf balls, and you try to hit them in this little yellow circle, the one that some of you saw on the Vine. But it was kind of hilarious. There's a trash can next to the area we had set up, and Getzlaff and Solani were trying to hit the balls into that trash can. I think you could see it on the first Vine I posted. So that was a little bit of comedy that happened on there. But overall, the event was really good. It was a long day. It was a hot day, but it was well worth it for a good cause. And everybody's pumped. Everybody's ready to go. As far as injuries go, Vatanen told me he was ready to go. No problems. I got to talk to Tim Jackman for a little bit as well. He told me that he's ready to go as well and excited for the season. And that's just the reoccurring theme. Everybody's really pumped up. They're really positive. They also appreciate everything that we do, because we do the same thing. We stay positive and focus on all the good stuff. So it'll be good. I hope to go back next year to the event again. We'll see. And, you know, bring up some more updates. It was exciting to see some of the players be, you know, candid about, you know, just how they felt and everything. So we'll just go from there, and I'll keep you guys updated when we find out more stuff. You know, around the league, there was also some news this week, too. We had some updates on some other situations with some of the other teams. You know, we had the Kane situation updated, Eddie, and it looks like Kane's going to be on the practice, you know, roster for Chicago, or starting out here. But I don't know. It's still kind of up in the air. What are your thoughts on them listing Kane as being out there?
I think it's more of just a formality. I mean, he's one of their top players, you know, if not their top player behind Taves, and, you know, you'd expect them to put him on the training camp roster no matter what. I mean, it's obviously still not certain the outcome of his situation, with the grand jury being postponed, so they're gonna have to wait for that. But I believe he can still attend training camp through, you know, even with this situation going on. So I'm not surprised of them putting his name on the training camp roster.
And Thomas, what are your thoughts? Are you not surprised as well?
I'm not surprised in the least. There's a part of me that feels that Kane shouldn't attend, just because of everything that's going on right now. There's a part that feels like he should just voluntarily sit out and focus on this until it's dealt with, at least through training camp and the preseason. If this is still going on once the regular season hits, then reassess and go from there. But I do feel like right now, I don't think he should be attending training camp, because you should focus on the legal process that's going on. That being said, they did release a statement that tomorrow they will basically give more information about what's going to happen. So I'm waiting to hear basically what they're going to say tomorrow before I make any decisions on how I fully feel about it.
Yeah, I get you. I mean, that's a fair statement. You know, I guess the concern with a lot of people, especially those in Chicago, Eddie, is, you know, the locker room atmosphere, if you will. I mean, you have to think that this has got to be a huge distraction for that team, Eddie.
Yeah, but I mean, you've got one of the best leaders in hockey and Jonathan Taves, and I'm sure with or without Kane, he can at least whip that dressing room into shape. I'm not sure. I don't think they've done much to improve their team. They're obviously in a tough situation this year, having to dump players, I don't know, for Stieg recently, for cap reasons. But, you know, I don't think it's too much of a distraction for them, especially with Taves being the captain. I mean, it's an issue, and more than anything, it just sucks for them having to lose a top player like Kane. But, You know, I think they'll be okay going into the season with Jonathan Toews wearing the C.
And what do you think, Thomas? I mean, obviously, Toews, you know, we know he's a great captain and a good leader, obviously, on the team in the locker room. Do you think the Kane situation will affect them? You know, obviously, they haven't figured out what's going on until the announcement, but how do you think the team will respond to this?
I think it will have an impact just because it'd be impossible not to, especially on some of their younger players and some of their newer players that they just got. That being said, this is still a veteran-laden roster. Besides Toews, you still have Hossa, you still have Keith, you still have Seabrook. You've got players who are well-respected in the league that know how to win, they know how to play the game right. I think they're going to be okay, but I don't think they'll be as good as they could be.
I think that's a fair statement, too. I think that they're not going to be as good as they could be, but they do have veteran leadership, and they're still going to, you know, they're still going to compete every night as well. For sure. So, you know, we'll keep an eye on that and obviously report more when that comes out. The other situation going on, you know, up the 5 freeway here, the Voinov situation, Eddie, it looks like he's just going to kind of self-deport himself. That kind of seems to be the latest situation. He's just kind of removing himself from the U.S. period.
Yeah, you know, another situation where the, you know, a little bit different than the Richards and Stoll situation where their contracts are terminated, but yeah, it looks like Voinov and the Kings are planning to part, and he's going to return to Russia and most likely play in the KHL. Didn't play last season, you know, because of the legal issues. So, you know, it's not too surprising. I mean, he's a Russian-born player, so, you know, usually you would expect him to always be thinking about returning to the KHL. So, and obviously with his issues here, that it, the opportunity presents itself. So, yeah, it's not surprising to see, but you know, it's an interesting development. We haven't really heard much on this situation until recently.
And Thomas, what are your thoughts? You know, of him basically taking himself out. You know, once he was put into ICE custody. You know, after the, all the other legal issues going on, you think it's a smart move by Voinov, or probably maybe the only move for Voinov?
Yeah, I initially was surprised. I was expecting him to probably be deported. So I think the self-deportation is him just trying to save a little bit of face in the situation. In my opinion, I'm very, very glad he is out of the NHL. I think it's unfortunate that he will probably continue his hockey career in the KHL, but that's simply the nature of professional sports. Athletes tend to get a little more leeway than others. So he'll probably continue in the KHL, and I'm just glad he's gone.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would feel that way. You know, the negative attention we've seen with the other sports, you know, it's kind of coming up a little bit here in the NHL, unfortunately, and hopefully it will go away, at least in these situations, you know, however they play themselves out, you know, legally and morally in the correct ways that we hope. You know, some good news, some big news that came out today was PK Subban. Eddie, he dropped $10 million. For the Montreal Children's Hospital, which is phenomenal. You know, a lot of people play against him on the ice. A lot of fans cheer against him. You know, he's an extremely fierce and tough competitor. But, oh, my God, man, what a move. What a classy move by PK Subban, Eddie.
Yeah, you know, he's been criticized in the past for being a bit of a show-off and a hothead. And, you know, but he's never really been you know, the kind of guy to shy away from things like this. You know, I'm not surprised that it's PK Subban that's doing this. And, you know, I mean, you don't see these kind of donations often. And, you know, it's amazing. It's $10 million is a lot of money even for an athlete. And, you know, he's donating that over 7 years. But still, that's an amazing donation and you know, a great class act by a class player.
Yeah, I mean, it's something you don't see that often, Thomas. I mean, when I heard this, I was surprised. I mean, you hear of other players doing things here and there, but, I mean, this is huge. You know, $10 million over 7 years is pretty amazing stuff.
It's phenomenal. I mean, to me, I think the player that most comes to mind in terms of doing charitable works, especially in Montreal, was Saku Koivu for all the money he donated to cancer research after he had cancer in the early 2000s. But this is just, personally, I think athletes in any professional sport are vastly overpaid. So I love it when they do this kind of thing and give so much of that money back to the community and to be able to help people. And the thing that I think I love about this the most was his reasoning for it. he said, and he asked himself, is he a hockey player or a person that plays hockey? And he decided he's the latter. He's not going to play hockey his entire life. And he wants to be remembered for actually doing something great for other people and not just for his skill on the ice. And I just love that he's doing it for those reasons.
Yeah, I thought that part of the quote was awesome. You know, actually, I posted a little thing on Facebook about that, talking about kind of this whole thing that we've done here, you know, and trying to do positive things and help out. You know, we've been doing a lot of stuff for veterans and people with cancer and the Duchenne thing recently. So when he talked about that, I thought it was a, you know, a very profound statement, because if you think about it, you can't be a hockey player forever. I mean, once you're a hockey player, you're always a hockey player. But I mean, in the sense of your body and physically going out there and doing it and playing at the level that, you know, that takes a toll on these guys. I just thought that was an amazing analysis of why he did what he did. I think it was spot on, Eddie.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said before, you know, it's a player that you would expect this from. I mean, PK on the ice, like I said, it's a hothead, but off the ice, he's been nothing but a class act with the fans in Montreal and the people in Montreal. And, you know, now this donating $10 million is ridiculous. I mean, I don't think I've seen any other athlete come close to this donation. So, you know, it's just great to see. And like Thomas said, you know, already athletes get paid so much money already, and especially the top-end athletes like PK Subban. And, you know, when they have the chance to get back and give this much back, it's always great to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, it's going to be, you know, just a good thing and a reminder to everybody, you know, why we do the things that we do, and trying to help out others. There's just no other real ultimate goal. So I applaud him for that. And we'll move on with some other news. You know, Thomas, the World Cup, they've been talking about that. It's coming up next year, and I guess it's going to be before the season again. Any other little updates that you can provide that you've heard about the World Cup?
So there are a lot of people that aren't looking forward to the World Cup that much, because they feel that the NHL is trying to replace this instead of going to the Olympics every year. If that happens, personally, I would be very upset. I love watching the Winter Olympics. I love watching the best players compete at the Winter Olympics. And yeah, the time zone in the next Olympics will be ridiculous. I think it's 8 or 9 hours off the East Coast, but we can deal with that. That being said, if the NHL chooses to go the route of both the World Cup and the Winter Olympics, then in that situation, I'll be very excited for this. I remember watching the last World Cup back in 2004, right before the year-long lockout. It was the final hockey we got to watch then. And while it wasn't the best hockey being played, because, you know, it's around the preseason, so the players are all a little rusty, it was still just a lot of fun to watch hockey. And, of course, with that shadow of the potential lockout about to happen, it made it even more special for me to watch. So for this iteration of the World Cup, they're going to do things a little bit differently. There'll be eight teams. Six of them will be Canada, the U.S., the Czech Republic, Finland, Sweden, Russia, and then two, for lack of a way to put it, wildcard teams. The first is Team Europe, which will be made up of the best European players from other European countries. So it's going to give a chance for, say, Kopitar from L.A., who's from Slovenia and the only Slovenian player in the NHL currently, to play at the World Cup, because Slovenia as a country would not be able to make this eight-team list of teams. So he'll be there. Char will be there for Slovakia. So Slovakia, to me, is kind of the surprises to leap off this list, and I thought we're probably in the seventh or eighth team, but they decided against that. And then the other wildcard team will be made up of players from North America who are under 23 years old. I don't remember what the cutoff date is, but it's right around the time of the start of the tournament. So Connor McDavid, the, you know, future phenom, will not be on Team Canada. He will be on the squad instead. From the Ducks' perspective, they will most likely have John Gibson appearing on this team, and he's probably the only one who will make that roster. But we all know what he can do in a short tournament. So because of him, they're going to be a surprisingly dangerous team, I think.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a fun thing. I think probably the main issue, and we kind of talked about this before we started the show, Eddie, is the injury situation. You know, when they have the Olympics, it's in the middle of the season. They have a couple of weeks off from the NHL games, and they're worried about injuries. But you're going to have this before the season, so to me, it's going to be fun, exciting to watch. Obviously, the time zone change and all that's going to be a little bit of a pain, as Thomas talked about. But what do you think in terms of the injury situation? You think it's something that may deter some players from going out there and doing it, or that they'll just kind of think of it as like an extended warm up for the season?
That's always an issue, and with the World Championships that were during the playoffs before, every year is that's an issue. You don't see all the top players always go to these teams because they did just play a long season, and the chance of injury is higher. But at the beginning of the season, I would be surprised to see a lot of players drop out, and I think it's definitely a good play by them putting it at the beginning of the season. And obviously, with the Olympics being mid-season, and they had the World Championships before at the end of the season. And I didn't watch the World Championships. I'm a big fan of international hockey, but just having it during the playoffs, obviously wasn't a great play. And having now this, the Olympics, the World Juniors, as the three main international hockey competitions, I think it's definitely a good thing. And if they can play it right by getting all the top players there, and Thomas said, with this Youngstars team and this Team Europe, having two really different setups as well along with other national teams makes it really interesting to watch.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I think it'll be good, before the season, get some of the guys warmed up, and I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be exciting to see who makes it and how it all plays out. Another announcement that came up this week, too, for the NHL, they're talking about the jersey situation again. Adidas is taking over officially. And Bettman came out and said that there would be no ads. So I know a lot of people were excited about that. But what is your take on that, Thomas? Do you think that he's just saying it now to kind of appease the fans, or do you think he's going to stick by his guns on this one?
I hope he sticks by his guns, but money talks. So we'll see what happens. I'm not completely opposed to ads. If it was like a really small patch somewhere, then I'd be like, whatever. But I don't want it looking like European jerseys. Those things are they're just so busy with, it looks like 20 different ads over the entire jersey. I don't want to see that. If it's a small patch somewhere, I can live with that, but no more than that.
I completely agree with you. If it's a couple, little patches here and there, like how the Reebok one is on the bottom area or something like that, I'm fine with that. But yeah, anything huge, then, as I mentioned before, I'm taking it to my tailor and having it taken off, or I'm taking it to Monkey Sports and seeing if they can do it. What is your take, Eddie, on Bettman's comments?
Yeah, a lot of the terminology and the words he used can be taken a different way. He said that there's been a lot of discussion of advertising on jerseys, and a lot of people saying that it's inevitable. And he came right out and said that's not true. And then, as well, saying that they're not currently considering putting advertising on NHL jerseys. There have been no discussions, formally or informally, and that's a good sign for now. But he also says we're not currently putting advertising on jerseys. He doesn't come right out and say we're never putting advertising on jerseys. And we talked about how Adidas is the most likely option if you're pursuing that route in any form, now or in the future. And the deal starts in 2017, 2018, and it's a 7-year deal. So I don't think we'll see it, anytime soon in the next 5 years or so. But nearing maybe the end of the deal, if they're thinking of renewing, and depending on how it goes, hopefully we don't have to get to that spot. But I think it's still a possibility, but farther down the road.
Yeah, I agree with you, and it's something that we're just going to have to monitor and watch. I definitely think down the road, you can't, unfortunately, rule it out completely. So, we'll, as news comes out, obviously, we'll keep everybody updated on that. A little bit of the exciting news in the preseason games, the NHL has decided to have 3-on-3 play, regardless of the outcome of some of the games. And for the Ducks, when they play Colorado on September 22nd, the Kings on the September 29th, and the Avalanche on October 1st, regardless of the score at the end of the game, they're going to have a 3-on-3 session after sudden death. And what a wonderful thing, huh, Thomas, to see this in action before the season.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I remember when they first introduced the shootout, they did the same kind of thing where after certain preseason games, regardless of the score, they just showed us the shootout to see what it'd be like. And I remember them like, hey, this is actually a lot of fun. And I just want to see who the Ducks are going to put out in these three games. I'm hoping that it'll be televised and I can watch them, but I just want to see, you know, I want to see Kessler, I want to see Getzlaff, I want to see Hagelin, I want to see Silverberg, I want to see Fowler, I want to see Theodore. I just want to see them rushing up ice and seeing what they can do, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
No, I agree. We talked about this before, Eddie. You know, one mistake, one bad pass, a trip on a skate. I mean, you're going to have a lot of 3-on-2s, 2-on-1s, and you know, the stuff could be over in a matter of seconds.
Yeah, and it's going to be really exciting hockey, and I think it's a smart play bringing it into the preseason and giving people, you know, a glimpse of what it's going to look like. You know, obviously, we don't get to see 3-on-3 that play that much during the season or any other time, so... You know, giving us a small dose of it during the preseason is always nice, and you know, hopefully, you know, according to the Ducks website, the two Ducks and Kings games are going to be on TV. I'm not sure if they're going to be previewing 3-on-3 in those games, but if they are, you can always have a chance to see it there. And you know, like you said, seeing Fowler and Getzlaff and Perry and different combinations of 3-on-3, you know, matching up with the three of the best guys in the other team, it's just going to be crazy to see, you know, end-to-end hockey for the whole time.
Yeah, and that's going to be fun. And, you know, I'll be at try to be at a couple of these games, and obviously we'll, you know, report how it goes and what happens on future shows. You know, to wind up the show, we have a couple of fan questions, so we'll take some of those right now and end the show here. But we had Alex ask us a question about the Ducks' schedule, and he was looking at the schedule and asking, you know, what we thought would be the most difficult week, excluding the last couple weeks of the season. And, you know, Eddie, looking at the schedule, we kind of looked at this before the show. It looks like that second week in February – it's going to be a rough one for the Ducks, probably, you know, the toughest week. They've got a road trip, East Coast swing. They're going to play Pittsburgh and Philly back-to-back, then an improved Columbus team. They'll go to Chicago, and then they'll have back-to-backs with Calgary and Edmonton. So, you know, you've got six games there in a matter of just over a week. So, you know, to me, that looks like the toughest stretch of games.
Yeah, and it's going to be against top teams, most likely, that are going to be making playoff pushes or, you know, pushing for top place in their division. So it's definitely going to be tough. I mean, every week is going to be tough, especially when you're playing a lot of these top teams in the Pacific Division that have gotten stronger. But, you know, making that trip out to the East Coast from down in Anaheim is never easy for the players, and having a couple of back-to-backs thrown in there is going to be tough. So, you know, you could look at that week ahead of time, and you could really see how tough it's going to be for the players.
Yeah, and Thomas, what are your thoughts? I mean, that kind of looks like the toughest week there. You've got the back-to-backs, and then, you know, out of the six teams, you know, everybody's either going to be a contender or even, you know, like Edmonton, they've improved. So it's not that week in February is not going to be easy.
Yeah, I mean, you start in Pittsburgh, you've got Crosby, you've got Malkin, you've got Kessel, you've got Letang, you've got Bonino, you've got some very, very, very good players on that team. Philadelphia right now looks like possibly the weakest of these teams on that trip, but they still have Voracek, they still have Drew, they're still a very dangerous team. Columbus, like Eddie said, is much improved this year as long as they're healthy. Last year, I think they would have made the playoffs if they had been healthy. And even when they were a basement-dwelling team, Columbus was just always a team the Ducks seemed to struggle against, so that's going to be a tough game. As we know from last year, any game in Chicago is going to be a hard-fought battle, a lot of fun to watch. Calgary, for my money, is probably the most improved team in the Pacific Division, if not the entire NHL. I think the moves they made, especially picking up Dougie Hamilton, just made them a contender for this season. And then finally, to Edmonton, I don't think they're going to be a great team, but they're going to be a really fun, exciting team, and I plan to watch a bunch of Oilers games just because I want to see Hall passing to McDavid and just seeing those two connect for some great goals. So, yeah, that's going to be a very, very rough trip. And then a couple days after that, they actually have one more game on the road in Vancouver. But for just that week in general before will be very, very hard.
Yeah, that looks like the toughest week in the schedule. You know, another question that Alex talked about, you know, a lot has been made about NHL 16 and the improvements and whatnot. And I haven't bought it, but I know Eddie and Thomas, you guys have played it and have experimented with it and checked it out. Eddie, what are your thoughts, you know, comparing the previous versions? That you think this one's a lot better? Fans should go buy it. I mean, you know, obviously the cover we don't like, but I mean, as far as the actual game, what do you think?
Well, I think anything is going to be better than last year's game. I mean, the game itself is still $80, so you know, either way, it's not really worth what you're paying for. But from compared to last year's game, it, you know, it's leaps and bounds better than what they produced last year. So, you know, they brought in the mascots. You know, they licensed, I believe, almost every arena, if not all of them. Realistic goal horns, realistic, you know, arena songs and goal songs, and you know, they just brought a lot more realism, like they do every year, to the game, and you know, brought a lot of fan favorite modes back. And you know, I know everybody up here has picked it up by now, and I'm picking up mine tomorrow. So, a big improvement, and you know, a lot of fun to play still.
And Thomas, what are your thoughts on the new game?
So for me, over the last 10, 12 years, the new NHL game, it's been an annual tradition for me to get it. I know a lot of years that doesn't mean a whole lot because it's still a very similar game to what came before it, but it's just something I've always enjoyed playing over the years. However, last year, with the basically stripping out of several modes and the modes that they were in, were severely pared down to the point where to me, it was unplayable because of what was missing. It was the first year in a long time I passed on getting it. So I was really excited to get this one because it's been 2 years since I bought a new NHL game. And I haven't played a lot of it. I haven't had a lot of time, unfortunately. I've played a couple of games, and as with any new NHL game, it always takes some adjustment to get used to, but I'm enjoying it so far. They have a new, basically, coaching assist feature in the game where it's giving you assists or options of saying, hey, switch the player, pass the puck, take the shot, and they'll say if you did a good shot or a good pass, or if you did a turnaround, they'll say you did bad. So that's kind of a nice little cool feature for either new players or people who didn't play NHL 15, which was a lot of people, to my understanding. I haven't delved yet into BA Pro mode, mainly because I've heard there's a couple of bugs in there they still need to fix, so I don't want to get deep into that until that is fixed. For BA GM mode, it looks revamped and a lot better than it has before. Unfortunately, though, the rosters aren't up to date. They won't do that until the season actually starts. Because there are a few players, most notably Jack Eichel, who they can't put in the game because they were playing NCAA hockey before, and they can't put them in there basically until they play their first professional game. So they'll have an roster update probably within the first week of the season actually starting, and it's at that point where I will personally get really deep into this game. And as for online modes, I don't play those very often, so I'm not one to talk on them. From what I've heard, they are improved, but there are still lag problems, as there are every year with this franchise.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess overall it seems pretty good. You know, if you haven't gotten your copy, you know, as Eddie and Thomas have talked about it, so it's well worth it. Obviously, a much better improvement from the one from last year. So it'll be a fun game, especially as Thomas talked about with the updates. Once the rosters are in place, then of course that's when it's going to be the most exciting, because it's going to be just like the actual teams. We have one final question we'll take before we sign off here, and this comes from one of our other buddies, Dr. Fowl, that he also does a podcast and is a big supporter of our show. He's talking about the new team, and who do you think will have a surprise breakout season this year, Eddie?
You know, I would have to go. I think it's, you know, the cop out easy answer, but I, you know, I believe Silfverberg. You know, he had a great season last year, but I think he can only improve on it this year, and I think he's got, you know, definitely has a shot at getting 30 goals this year, and playing on a line with most likely Kessler and Hagelin is only going to improve his ability, and you know, if he takes a couple more shots, and you know, he's already got a great release and great shot accuracy, if he can get the puck in the stick you know, more often, I think he can reach 30 goals and you know, possibly even 60 points and have a real breakout season.
And Thomas, who do you think of the Ducks' current team would have a breakout year?
I think Silfverberg's a good answer. I'm going to go with a bit of a strange one. So my answer is actually going to be Shea Theodore, and here's why. So for the last few seasons, the Ducks have gone through some severe injury issues, and a couple years ago in Lindholm's rookie season, the Ducks were short Lucas Bisa, Sheldon Surrey, Brian Allen, I think, and maybe one other player, And Lindholm had a great training camp and basically forced his way onto the roster with all those injuries. And then he played so good, the Ducks said, you know what, we have to keep him on the roster. So they started making trades, making moves to keep him on the roster. And I have a feeling that Theodore is going to have a similar season. I'm hoping not at the start of the season where the Ducks are just dropping like flies, but I think at some point this season he will end up on the roster, and he's going to be so good they have to keep him up. So to me, it'll probably be Theodore.
That's an interesting one, but, you know, I see where you're coming from on that. I mean, that makes sense. For me, I'm going to go with Hagelin. You know, talking to him at the event, he's really excited to be here from New York. He's ready to go. I actually hinted to him. I said, you know, what about a Kessler Hagelin Silverberg line? And he was like, yeah, I'd like that. He's like, you know, that wouldn't be such a bad idea. You know, again, obviously, you know, Bruce has to, you know, figure that all out. But I really think he's going to break out this year. You know, even if he's not on the top line, I think if he is on the second line, and if that is indeed the pairing with Kessler and Silverberg, I agree with Eddie too. Silverberg's going to be up there too. I think that Hagelin will be one of the most improved players, and I think that that second line is probably going to be one of the lines to watch. I mean, you know, we saw it in the playoffs last year. The Ducks' second line was just as good as the first line. So that's who I'm going to go with, and line-wise as well. But, yeah, I think Theodore could make an impact, Silverberg, Hagelin. The key is this Ducks team, as a lot of players said, is well-balanced, plenty of options, plenty of players that can score, that can roll all four lines, you know, and they're just really, really excited to get the season going. So we'll wrap up this show here, and we'll get you updated next week when, you know, more stuff comes out. I'll be at some of the practices and get you guys some more photos and updates. And until then, thanks for supporting us, and see you later.